Marlene Gonzalez, an immigration attorney in Salt Lake City, helps immigrants to gain legal status to live in the United States. But she worries that since President Trump's executive actions that have stepped up immigration enforcement, innocent people with good intentions are getting swept up.
Immigration can take years, maybe 5 months to 3 years, to give someone the legal benefit that they've applied for. It's not, just going over the counter and asking for your green card because you're married to a U.S. citizen. So in the meantime, they're walking the street, they get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, no due process. So it's a big problem.
Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, a forum on how Utah's immigrant community and law enforcement are responding to Trump's executive actions on immigration. That's coming up, but first, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Within a week of his inauguration, President Trump issued a series of executive actions with significant implications for immigrants, both unauthorized and legal immigrants. The actions seek to address public safety, such as calling for the hiring of 10,000 additional U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents, and for the building of a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Raids and arrests by ICE agents have reportedly been on the rise, as well as reports that immigrant communities and their families, including communities living here in Utah, are experiencing tremendous anxiety and fear. Recently, the Hinckley Institute of Politics hosted a panel discussion on the current atmosphere for the local immigrant community and immigration enforcement in Utah. The panelists included Luis Garza. He's the executive director of Comunidades Unidas, an organization serving the Latino community along the Wasatch Front and helping them to acquire health care and to know their legal rights. Also, Marlene Gonzalez, an immigration lawyer based in Salt Lake City. Her firm is Gonzalez Law USA. Also, Zay Min Zhao. She's the director of the Office of New Americans and Refugees in the Salt Lake County Mayor's Office. And the discussion was moderated by Miranda Best, a student.
Okay, so the first question we have for you is, what has been your involvement with the immigrant and undocumented community?
I can answer that. Okay, so I've been an immigration lawyer for, I've been practicing immigration law for 17 years now. And I worked for the nonprofit, for the Multicultural Legal Center for about 6 years of those 17. So I have dealt a lot with immigrants and undocumented immigrants. So let's make that point. Not all immigrants are undocumented.
Like you was mentioned, I'm the executive director of Comunidades Unidas, Communities United. So we're a nonprofit organization in West Valley, and we provide services to the immigrant community regardless of immigration status. And they range from connecting people with healthcare services, so we help people navigate the healthcare system. Then we also provide immigration services, so we are accredited by the Department of Justice to provide immigration services that are, basic services but very needed in our community, such as citizenship, family petitions, work permits, and we help through all of those processes for families that qualify. And then we also focus a lot on civic engagement and community leadership. So one of our main goals is to encourage our immigrant communities here in Utah to be more active, to be more engaged, and to speak up about issues that are important to them. And so we do a lot of those type of programs in the community. And our services are open to anyone, whether people are immigrants or not, undocumented or not. So we really don't ask and we don't keep track of that information.
So my name is Zeman Sao Z, and I'm with Salt Lake County, the mayor's office. I have been working with new Americans in the community for as long as I can remember. I'm an immigrant myself and have firsthand experiences about the legal status and how to obtain them. For the past 8 years, I have focused a lot on the refugee community in Salt Lake County. The role that Salt Lake County believes in is that we believe that we welcome everyone to a community regardless of where they come from, whether religion or ethnicity are. Once they become a member of community, it's our role to make sure that they can become successful in whatever they do. This is important not just to the new Americans who are coming into a community, but it's important to our community itself. So we look at bigger picture about what are some of the policies in place, how can we do to really maximize the potentials that new Americans bring to a community. And what my office does is really do more coordination rather than direct services.
Great, thank you. How have you seen contribution of the immigrant and undocumented persons to our local communities?
Undocumented immigrants are our unsung heroes. Many of them have children who are U.S. citizens who are thriving in the United States, college students and professionals. And then, of course, there are immigrants who are legal immigrants. You know, we've seen they're either lawful permanent residents or citizens. There are many successful immigrants here in Utah and in the United States. I mean, I guess locally, right, mm-hmm. we have a lot of, I'm sure you see them, professional immigrants working in the communities.
Like I said, I have the same handouts. That there was a new report by the New American Economy that I invite everyone to check out, and it has very important statistics about Utah, and is divided up by congressional districts as to how, what the contributions of immigrants are here in the state and in the different districts. But related to your question specifically, there's a section on undocumented immigrants. And their contributions as well. And just a fact here, the list is undocumented entrepreneurs here in our state is over 4,400. There's a lot of people, you know, that own businesses, they contribute to the economy, they are paying taxes, they are really living the American dream. And so that's why it's so important for us to continue to fight and push for immigration reform, because that's the majority of these people are American in every single way except by that paper. And so I think I really encourage all of you to check out this report by the New American Economy that talks a lot about the contributions of immigrants, new Americans in general in our state.
Well, you already stole all my data.
That's why I just want a brief overview.
Just give an overview about new Americans in Salt Lake County. 12.7% of Salt Lake County's population is foreign-born, meaning that they're what we're classifying as new Americans. So think about those numbers. About 1 in 7 residents in Salt Lake County are what we call new Americans. And their contribution to a community is enormous. They are starting businesses at a higher rate than the general population. More new Americans are at the working age, meaning that they're working and are contributing to a tax base. In 2014, they contributed $8 billion in the metro GDP. That's huge. The Salt Lake County budget is $1.5 billion annually, and the new American population is contributing $8 billion. So what are we going to do without the contribution of new Americans that are here? And going back to the point, that is this essential that we recognize the contributions of the new Americans that are here and make sure that they're being welcome, that they feel safe, and they continue to be a contributing member of a community.
Excellent. Okay, there have been several executive orders from the Trump administration that have serious implications for the immigrant and undocumented communities. What are they and how do they affect the community?
I have a lot of details on that, but basically the executive orders that affect us the most immediately here are the ones that because the Department of Homeland Security has issued a memorandum, a couple of memos, implementing the President's executive order from January 25th, enhancing public safety in the interior of the United States. There he outlines his policies, and basically, you know, he calls for a tripling of immigration officers. He's thinking, you know, he's talking about hiring 10,000 ICE officers, 5,000 Border Patrol officers. Right now, I mean, if they could get to 1,000, that would be great if we have the resources to hire that many people. They drastically expand the government's priority for deportation, whereas in the Obama administration, in his priority enforcement program, they targeted people with convictions, with prior deportations, and certain criminal offenses such as DUIs and domestic violence. This new executive order covers people, just about anybody at this point, people who have, okay, final order of removal, that's fine, charged with any criminal offense, whether you were found guilty or not, okay? So that kind of goes, you know, against our due process laws where one is innocent until found guilty. So somebody who's charged and somebody who's committed acts that constitute a chargeable criminal offense, so without having been charged, and leaving it also up to an immigration officer who's neither a judge nor a lawyer, somebody who's suspected, okay? This is not conviction. They suspect that you've committed a fraud against in your immigration case, then you're deportable. Anybody who's abused a public benefits program and who, in the judgment of an immigration officer, poses a risk to public safety or national security. So the problem with this is that law enforcement officers, you know, regularly judge individuals based on their appearances. So it's open to profiling. They also want to do a lot more of what we call the 287G agreements. That's agreements between law enforcement and immigration for law enforcement to act as immigration officials. They will be trained to act as immigration officials, and so it's down to the street level, which opens it up to profiling. We know that the facts show that in 2013, the University of Illinois report said that 70% of undocumented Latino immigrants and 28% of Latino U.S. citizens were less likely to contact law enforcement if they become victims of crimes, because they are likely to be asked about their status instead of focusing on the crime and the victimization. So there's a lot of problems with executive orders. They're vague. Some of the points are vague. And we have yet to see how they're going to pan out. We have seen, you know, raids in different states the other week, was it? And so basically, I think the executive orders have emboldened ICE officers to, yes, I agree with criminal enforcement, okay, but I think the problem with just getting anybody without a crime, as an immigration lawyer, that's my job, is to help people get legal status. Immigration can take years, maybe 5 months to 3 years, to give someone the legal benefit that they've applied for. It's not, you know, just going over the counter and asking for your green card because you're married to a U.S. citizen. Sometimes, in some cases, that could take 5 months. Other cases, 3 years. So in the meantime, they're walking the street. They get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. No due process. So it's a big problem. And we hope that, it's mainly talk, but many people, immigrants, are afraid. So we've been doing Know Your Rights seminars. Our immigration lawyers, American Immigration Lawyers Association, Utah chapter, we have organized, there are about 40 volunteers who have organized to volunteer at Know Your Rights seminars. So those are the things that are the main things that affect us here locally with the executive orders.
Well, the only thing I will add is that, you know, that fear that we've been seeing in the community, that has really been devastating for immigrants here in the state. And just the fact, you know, since the executive order came out and now with the DHS memo, basically like Marlene mentioned, you know, that it means that everyone who's here without documents might be a priority for deportation, which really sends a chilling effect into our communities. We have already heard of issues of parents not being sure if they can take their children to school and being feeling unsafe at the schools, of even legal permanent residents saying, is my green card going to be taken away? And then also issues that people don't know if they should be going to the grocery stores, if they should be driving their cars, if they should. So it's really been really concerning consequences from this. And even though it hasn't necessarily been implemented in the state yet, there's a lot of fear in the immigrant community and there's a lot of concern. So that's why we are pushing for that Know Your Rights information, so people know what those rights are, they know who to contact, and that they are ready for any contact with law enforcement or immigration.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. Today we're airing a forum recently hosted at the Hinckley Institute of Politics on the recent surge of immigration enforcement since President Trump's executive actions and how Utah's community of immigrants are coping with the current political climate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, and we replay them, unedited, in their entirety as a public service to you. And today we are airing a discussion on the implications of President Trump's executive actions for immigrants and their families living in Utah. The panelists of this discussion included Luis Garza, the executive director of Comunidades Unidas, Marlene Gonzalez, an immigration attorney based in Salt Lake City, Zay Min Zhao, she's the director of the Office of New Americans and Refugees in the Salt Lake County Mayor's Office, and the discussion was moderated by student Miranda Best.
So, President have released several executive orders, and one is on hold. But the news has said that he's going to draft a new executive order. And that one I'm talking about is protecting the nation from foreign terrorist entries into the United States. That particular executive order is really affecting a refugee community locally. Essentially, what the executive order is banning individuals from seven mostly Muslim dominant countries from coming into the United States. And so if we look at the refugee population right now in Salt Lake County, many of the refugee population are from those seven nations that we talk about. We see a lot of family unification cases for resettlement. And so actually more than 50% of the refugees that comes into the state of Utah or the United States is family reunifications. So for individuals who are from those countries, what that means is that there's fear that their family could no longer join them. And many of those families have been in the process for 2-3 years to get all of the screenings in place to be able to come and join their families. And so there's a lot of fear in a community in terms of what does this mean. You know, there's still a lot of unknown, but the order itself really is making people to question, you know, what are the intents of singling out the seven nations? Is it because they're from Muslim majority nations? And those are the questions that people are asking themselves. Locally, how that particular executive order is affecting a community is that especially individual from the Muslim faith has been very fearful. There are small percentage of a community that really took and looked at what's happening in the national order and take it to themselves that is a permission for them to enact do things to individuals from those communities. We've seen lots of bullyings in the schools. We've seen a woman from the Muslim faith who is refused to leave the house because they are scared. And so there's a lot of consequences. And I think at the end of the day, it comes back to the unknown, the fear, and what we need to do as a community is just send a message to a new Americans that they are safe here.
Great. Thank you for bringing up those concerns. So having addressed these, how do these orders affect your organization's work?
gives us a lot of work, a lot of calls from existing clients who are in process for their immigration applications. What will happen to me? What if I get stopped by the police? So, you know, they have avenues for relief. I mean, they're not deportable because they have an application in process. So I have to explain that to everybody who has an application going that, you know, here, just bring your know your rights. Here, we give these out to the communities. This is the right tarjeta de derechos in Spanish and rights card in English. We give it to them back to back so that they can present it to the officer if they're being arrested in English. And basically it says, I exercise my Fifth Amendment right not to remain silent. I have an attorney. Please talk to my attorney. And so I have a lot of cases like this who are, you know, with the U visa applicants, they're victims of crimes. They've been victimized. And we have this application that's taking 3 years. 3 years to process. It used to take 9 months to process. In the meantime, with all this action going on, what's going to happen? So it gets us a lot busier with informing people. Green card holders ask, is it okay to travel? Well, it depends. It depends, right? To see, it's profiling. Is it, oh, okay, from those countries? No, don't leave. Europe, you're Italian, okay. You know, I have a friend whose uncle was stopped at the airport, a U.S. citizen, naturalized U.S. citizen, with his passport coming into Houston with his American-born wife. He's a citizen. They told him to go to the non-citizen line. He was questioned for 1 hour. This was the day after the travel ban was issued, the executive order on the Friday. This was Saturday. So I don't know what to tell people. I do know what to tell people. The reality, there's a reality, and there's a law. Okay. The law, the fact is, we still have our constitutional rights. So it just makes it harder for us. It puts fear in a lot of people. But the point is, we still have the Constitution.
And for us, it's been very similar. You know, so really busy since the election, really. But mostly people being, like I mentioned, fearful, wanting more information, wanting to know the resources. So our work is focused on that, you know, that we partner with immigration attorneys. They provide the legal expertise, but for us, we provide the social support for families. We provide the information. We also get into action. And so what we've been doing is organizing our community, making sure that, you know, again, they know their rights, they know how to speak up in issues that are important to them, like the schools. And like Z mentioned, the bullying, we have definitely heard a lot of those issues. And so we are working with parents as to how do they talk to the teachers and the principals and administrators about the issue of bullying in their schools and how they should be, the schools should stand up for all children and make sure that they have a zero tolerance policy for bullying. So those are some of the examples of things that we've been doing, and we continue to get a lot of phone calls of people just wanting to know that information. So the Know Your Rights seminars are open to anyone who would like to come. They're very frequent now, and so people can come and learn more about that information.
Great. I think that from a public sector perspective, we've been doing a lot of work to just guarantee a community that they are safe here within a community. You know, a lot of things that we take for granted that especially from Utah, where we're seen as a welcoming state, we take things for granted that, yeah, we're always going to be welcoming. But we have to do a lot more now to just emphasize that point. You know, we've seen public elected officials coming out, both Salt Lake City Mayor and Salt Lake County Mayor, as well as Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office have all came out to say that they're in support of a new American population here, making sure that they do feel safe. And I think that's really important, especially to come from the leaders in the community, to tell them that we are with you in this, regardless of what's happening nationally. This is not what our community stands for. These are not our values, and we're here to make sure that you understand that. So from that perspective, I think that's one thing that we've been doing a lot since the election. We have proclamations that are made. The county council drafted a resolution and it was passed. We have the various things that's going on in the community, and I think we'll have to continue to do that because we're seeing a lot of negative backlashes from what's happening nationally, and we have to do to think about positive things we can do to combat those negative images.
Right. It's good to see you guys are keeping busy with making these changes. So several local jurisdictions within Utah have come out against these executive orders. What are the implications?
So it really works well to work with the jurisdictions. Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, we're very happy that they've come out, the officials have come out and say we're in support of the community. It allows them, doing this, working with the communities, allows them to do their jobs. As with law enforcement, it really is all about public safety, right? Mm-hmm. And if the people cannot trust them, they're not going to get information, they're not going to get crime solved. And it could, more crimes could be perpetrated if people were silent about, the victims were silent.
And I think it's great, that all these messages of support that we've been receiving from different elected officials. We also met, in addition to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, we also met with West Valley City and South Salt Lake. We met with the chiefs of police, and they both have mentioned the same thing. They are worried about the safety of their communities. They practice a model of community-based policing, and so I think that's really a good model for us to make sure that trust is still there between immigrant communities or new American communities and the police. So we try to, as much as possible, that it's not very feasible right now, but as much as we can help people feel a little bit safer and get that message from law enforcement is always helpful. The one thing that I am concerned about is, yes, they have all come out and said this positive messages, but then we also need to continue to hold them accountable and make sure that the policies that are put in place, make sure that these memorandums, that those things, that the things that they promised and that they came out mentioning, that they fulfill them, and that they don't resist the political pressures, especially from the national level, because we need to uphold those values that we have as a state. Like the Utah Compact, the focus on families. And I think those values need to be uplifted, and they need to be make sure that we hold them accountable to all of these documents and all these announcements that they're making.
I think that's great. I don't know if part of your question is referring to the concept of sanctuary cities, and if that's the case, I think that none of the jurisdictions, local jurisdictions, has come out and say that they are a sanctuary city or county. It is a word that is being used very loosely. There's not a clear definition of what a sanctuary city is. There is consequences that we heard about from the federal, from the administration, about what they could do to sanctuary cities and holding back funding that is really vital to a community. So at this point, I think that at least from Salt Lake County, we affirm the values that we talk about. We're not dedicating ourselves as a sanctuary city, but we are a welcoming city, and we want to make sure that our values are being upheld.
Great. You three have done a wonderful job at explaining what's going on with these policies and what your organizations are doing to address them, but we'd also like to know how community members can get involved with these issues.
Okay, so keep informed. There's a lot of information being disseminated in the media, social media. If you would like to volunteer for an organization that helps the immigrants, that's great. There are different types of organizations, but we're all trying to pull together, aren't we? We want somebody to be able to say, okay, if I contact them, then I can get help from these other organizations. So, get involved, volunteer, stay in touch with what's being promoted. We're having a few Know Your Rights seminars coming up on the 28th, on the 8th, on the 22nd. On the 8th and the 22nd, it's with the Mexican consulate at Centro Civico from 6 to 8 in the evening. So it's just, you know, if you have a neighbor, if you have a friend who's an immigrant, maybe in fear, I have gotten a call from a local business saying that our people are in fear. What can you do? You know, what can they do? So I told them about the Know Your Rights seminars, and they sent some of their people there. Okay. So stay informed.
Yeah, so just going along the lines of volunteer, we're a community-based organization, like I mentioned, so we're always looking for volunteers and people that want to be involved. We meet, we have community meetings twice a month, and then we also have our advocacy work. And so everyone is invited. We need a lot of help in terms of we're creating educational videos, we're creating directories of resources, we are monitoring bills, we are contacting our legislators, which we requested a few meetings, and they haven't happened, but we need more help to get those meetings scheduled and make sure that we are speaking up about this issue. So I think the worst thing that we can do is to stay silent and to witness something that happens. We have heard of issues happening like at the track station, at schools, at grocery stores. So I think also us community members, we all have a responsibility to speak up and to not let these things happen, and make sure that we record whatever's happening, and that we hold those people accountable. Because I think it's really a matter of all of us coming together and making sure that we are supporting all communities.
I think that one thing is really important to educate yourself more about who New Americans are and their contribution to a community, and being able to articulate those contributions to our elected officials, especially to a congressional delegation. Luis mentioned that there's some new data that came out of the New American Economy. So it's the newamericaneconomy.com, I believe, and it has data highlighting the contributions of New Americans. And the message that we really need to send is that, look, this the New Americans we're talking about are part of a community, and a community cannot continue to grow without this New Americans. And I think those messages are really, really important, making sure that people understand the importance of immigration and how our state depends on immigration to be able to continue to be competitive nationally. So I encourage you to educate yourself more about the contributions, the facts that you need to know about New Americans and immigration, so on and so forth. Off and share those thoughts with, you know, not just your congressional delegation, but everyone you know, so that we are just more prepared to make the right decisions.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today on the program, we're airing a forum recorded recently at the Hinckley Institute of Politics addressing how immigrants and local law enforcement are responding to President Trump's executive actions on immigration and public safety. The panelists included Luis Garza, the executive director of Comunidades Unidas, Marlene Gonzalez, an immigration attorney based in Salt Lake City, Zhe Min Xiao, she's the director of the Office of New Americans and Refugees in the Salt Lake County Mayor's Office. And the conversation was moderated by student Miranda Best. At this point in the conversation, the panel took questions from the audience.
Understanding that the Trump administration would like local law enforcement to do that, but that they don't really have the authority to force them to do that, and that local law enforcement, at least to this point, has said they don't want to do that and they don't intend to do that. Is that accurate?
That's correct. So currently, there are 32 law enforcement agencies in 16 states participating in that program. And it's an agreement, so they I think for sure Arizona, right? Maricopa County. They have agreed, they've signed this agreement to be trained and exercise immigration, enforce immigration laws. Our officials, I think Salt Lake City, so this whole idea of sanctuary city, you know, the government defines them as people, jurisdictions that are not cooperating with them, that have not signed or do not want to sign this agreement with them. And so we've heard that, you know, he's threatening to take away funding. But then that's so vague, really, like funding for what? I mean, there's so many forms of funding. They cannot surely take away funding for law enforcement for, you know, refusing to enter. They cannot force, basically, the jurisdictions. But I think Salt Lake County, we have a jail. The jail, when people are jailed, ICE goes to the jail and checks people's status. But I'm not sure if they have an agreement, specific agreement, other than that they are allowed to go to jail. Salt Lake City doesn't have a jail, so there's no such thing as, you know, really being sanctuary. It's not an issue. So right now, 32 law enforcement agencies. So I don't know how they're going to coerce them, but I think, you know, President Trump said we can withhold funding, but that's vague. 32 law enforcement agencies in 16 states. There are 16 states with that participate in that 287G agreement.
Another question in the back?
Since I'm here. Where is the information about the Know Your Rights seminars, the schedule? Where can we find that?
Let's so do we, it on your website.
So we have it on our website. Well, actually, no, it's only on our Facebook page. And so if you look, and I have information about our organization, but it's Comunidades and then the letter U on social media. And then we post all the seminars that are coming up.
Facebook has really been effective for us to you know, communicate to the community.
But I have the information back here. I can definitely give it to you.
I just had a question. So in that same, like in the same second executive order, President Trump also outlined like a process, or in that memo, they outlined that they would be deporting non-Mexican illegal immigrants to Mexico too. So what is the legal status of those people? Because technically we're basically creating illegal Mexican immigrants with like it, by deporting them to Mexico when they're from other countries. So what is their status in Mexico?
Yeah, no, they can't. People are deported to their home countries or the countries that they designate.
But like under the same rules that was calling for like 10,000 ICE agents, like they were also saying that they're going to just deport like, you know, people that aren't from Mexico to Mexico anyways. And then President Enrique Peña Nieto also came out and said that we're against this because these aren't Mexican citizens.
Right. Maybe that's addressing people who are at the border, crossing the border, that they can just send them back because that's where they crossed from. That's the only thing I could think of. And it's what we call expedited removal. And that also takes away due process rights. Expedited removal means that you're out of here, we don't care, you don't get your day in court. Normally, when people are caught, not at the border, but here, okay, say interior, they are served with papers to appear in court. That's due process. And the executive order seeks to do away with that. Forget it, you're not going to see a judge. The officer is going to make that determination. But I don't know about being deported to Mexico if you're not Mexican, but I think it's because if you're caught at the border, because people do, okay? Latin Americans, they go to Mexico and cross, right? So we know the Central Americans, right? The unaccompanied minors. So I think that's what they mean. It's like go back to the other side. which is another, you know, that just tells you how it doesn't make, a lot of the things that are said do not make sense.
Hi, my name is Sam. It's nice to meet all of you guys. Thanks for speaking here. So in response to a spike in like racially motivated or culturally motivated sort of xenophobic crimes, are you guys coordinating with communities to help you know, engagement and understanding between new American and pre-existing American communities? Like, is that the proper term, pre-existing Americans?
We do have a planning activities coming up soon to engage individuals from both communities, and we call them receiving communities, and then the new American communities. I think that more dialogues that we have together, the better it is. You know, a lot of the stuff is just coming up. Individuals just see themselves and volunteering to get people together and just talk, because it's so important, right? We seen the refugee march couple weeks ago, and that was organized by a group of refugees, and it was amazing to see that you know, I think 80% of the individuals in the march weren't refugees themselves; they were from the receiving community. So we are trying to help facilitate more of those activities in the community. And if you have any ideas, please let us know. We would love to support those efforts.
Hi, my name is Mel. My question is about, well, wondering if you could talk a bit about immigrant rights as human rights and if there's much dialogue around that in your organizations, because obviously all the statistics saying, talking about the contributions that immigrants make to the United States is great, but even without those numbers, they're still humans and they still have human rights. And if, I don't know, just if those dialogues are happening.
Yep, so I mean, they're definitely part of the Know Your Rights presentation, you know, that is part of, you know, we mentioned the constitutional rights, we mentioned that we all have rights as human beings, so that's definitely part of the conversation. And we not only share, we share statistics, but then we also share the stories, which I think are very important as well. And so we are collecting stories right now from different, I guess, walks of life, you know, different people, because I think that definitely puts a face to the issue, and that it's important for all of us to know that, you know, we're talking about our neighbors, we're talking about family members, we're talking about our fellow churchgoers, I think it's really important to, you know, definitely humanize the issue as much as possible. But then we definitely have a two-pronged approach of some people prefer the data, some people prefer the human story. So I think we share both. And then whatever, where it touches the heart or the mind, then I think it's something that we should continue to talk about, both sides.
So going back to your previous question and answer the current question as well, Salt Lake County, in partnership with Salt Lake Chamber, launched the Welcoming Salt Lake initiative to make a community a welcoming place for everyone. And there was a task force that met and created a Welcoming Salt Lake plan. They are basically short-term strategies to make Salt Lake and eventually the entire state of Utah a welcoming place. And we have very tangible strategies underneath that plan that individuals could contribute to. So for instance, one of the strategies is to encourage people to host neighborhood parties, where you could just, you know, get your neighbors together and know your neighbor kind of type of events. And another thing is just sharing stories of immigrants, right? We did an immigrant story project where we just highlight, you know, who are the immigrants? And sometimes, a lot of times, we don't know that our best friend is actually an immigrant, and being able to share those stories is really important, and to humanize who they are as individuals, and not just labeling them that you're an immigrant, you are a refugee, you are a whatever. But as a whole, we are part of the Utah community.
Hello, my name is Greg Roth, and I'm very interested in volunteering, and I was just wondering if you could go into any more detail as to what specific activities volunteers get involved in, maybe specifically what kind of volunteers you need at this point.
Yeah, so we meet twice a month, and then we have a whole list of action items that I can share with anyone who's interested. Basically ranges, so our campaign is called the Family Unity Campaign, and it's focused on three main areas, which are education, protection, and action. And so obviously the educational piece is the Know Your Rights information. The protection is we're working, again, with attorneys, with the ACLU, to make sure that if the government violates people's basic rights, then how do we go about it? You know, how do we form, we're basically forming a rapid response team as to how do we address if there's any raids, how do we address if families are separated. So that's the protection piece, and then we have the action, which is the advocacy and the meetings. Like, we met with the West Valley City Council on Tuesday night, and so it really depends on the interest of the person, but it's in those main three categories of education, protection, and action. And they range from, you know, like I mentioned, we're creating educational videos, so we need people that have that background. We are creating a directory. We need somebody with the policy or the legislative interest so we can monitor and track those policies and bills. So I think it's quite a range, you know, of we basically go by the people's interest, and we can definitely talk more about that at the end if you're interested.
Hi, I'm Joy, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about DACA and if those students or children are still protected from deportation and what you think might happen to that program under President Trump.
Yeah, good question. We were so afraid because Mr. Trump, during his campaign, was saying, I'm going to get rid of DACA, and we were really afraid of that. So DACA, for those of you who don't know, is for children who came under the age of 16, went to high school here, have been living here since 2007, June 15, 2007. We're here without lawful status in 2012, June 15, 2012, when President Obama announced that executive order. They can get a two-year work permit, okay? It allows them to work here legally and stay here. And so I was really afraid, and I was telling everybody that, you know, if I were a businessman, I would not get rid of DACA because there are 750,000 DACA recipients. 750,000 young people who are employed. 750,000 who have employers who will lose them if they got rid of this. So there was a leak, a draft memo, executive order that did not come out, obviously, but this implementation of the security inside the United States says specifically that DACA is not included, nor is there was a mention of DAPA. For those of you who don't know, DAPA is Deferred Action for Parental Accountability. It's for parents of U.S. citizens who came without a visa, who came without inspection across the border. If they have U.S. citizen children, for the people who came, so if they have U.S. citizen children, the U.S. citizen children cannot petition for them to get legal status because there's no forgiveness for that, okay? So this is another, sorry, I'm going in tangent here, but I wanted to, DACA is in place. We encourage people, young people, to apply for DACA as long as they finished high school. I've been here since 2007. And I think it's going to remain in place. It's renewable every 2 years. But what I want to add is we look at, or, you know, media, where people are looking at undocumented, well, they cross the border, well, they, you know, they don't belong here, they broke the law. But you know what? The laws are so bad that even if they were married to a U.S. citizen, have four U.S. citizen children, have been here 20 years, sometimes they cannot apply for status. Why? Because the law in 1996, I remember this as the Newt Gingrich Congress, they made a big immigration overhaul. Anybody who crosses the border more than twice after April 1st, 1997 is barred from applying for legal status. So this is, let's take the father who's married to a U.S. citizen with four U.S. citizen children. Did he know that the law changed? Back then, people could go back and forth across the border. Did he know April 1st he shouldn't come back? No, he didn't know. Now, does he have an ability to get legal status? No. So he's your undocumented, okay? He's your undocumented. The person who did not know, right, that the laws that affected him, that forever, well, it bars him for 10 years. Basically, he has to go back to his home country for 10 years. And how is that, raising children here, being separated from the wife? That's how people can remain undocumented. So what President Obama did with DAPA was, okay, well, these parents can't be petitioned by their children. Why don't we at least give them a work permit, a 2-year work permit like the DACA kids? But that was blocked by 26 states, including Utah. The Supreme Court said 4-4. No, no DACA. So they are your undocumented. We created them with our bad laws. So it's not black and white, you know. When people look at, oh, they're undocumented, they should not have rights. Number one, every person inside the United States has due process rights regardless of their status. That's, you know, that's the law. Supreme Court said that. So DACA, we're very happy that DACA is still in place. We encourage young people to apply for DACA and renew their DACAs.
Hi, my name's Robin, and my best friend is undocumented, and she could not be here today, but she wanted me to ask you a question. She was thinking that here in Salt Lake County, and maybe in the state of Utah, that there should be a place where information could be consolidated about when there is a raid going on, or there is a checkpoint, or we know that ICE is over at the Rancho Market. And I'm wondering if that's something that Comunidades Unidos is doing.
We were working on that, so we need more help.
So we need an app that sends an alert.
Yeah.
So we started a hashtag, so it's MigraWatchUT or ICE out of Utah, so the hashtag. So at least we're trying and kind of testing it out on social media and see how it works. And actually this morning there was a video posted, I don't know if people have seen it, it already went viral. Somebody that was detained on the freeway, entering the freeway in Midvale on 7200 South. And it's already been, you know, so as soon as that hits the internet, then obviously it goes all over. But then we don't know necessarily the details of the case. You know, we don't know if they had a warrant. We don't know kind of, but then it definitely sends a very scary message to everyone. So I think that we've been kind of struggling with the reports that we hear and then trying to prove them or trying to make sure that they actually happened first here in Utah and then that we know more about the situation. Because we always try to mention in all of our seminars the difference between a raid and a detention. You know, so a raid is when people get picked up anywhere. A detention is if they come after a specific person, which I think is very important for us to differentiate those. Because it creates less of that fear that if we say a raid and it can go anywhere, then coming here, then it's obviously a very scary situation. But we are trying to create that central location where people can report and then work with the attorneys so we can respond if it makes sense. The issue is that we're just getting so many reports and we just, capacity-wise, we haven't been able to prove the majority of them except for the one this morning. Yeah, so one is Migra, so MIGRA, watch, UT, and the other one is ICE out, UT.
Hi, my name's Mary. I'm assuming your offices have been in touch with Utah's congressional delegations about your various concerns, and I'm curious about their reaction to your expression of their concerns and any plans they may have in relationship to these executive orders of our new Republican president.
Well, we tried to meet with them and they will not meet with us, but.
So we have a series of meetings scheduled. Actually, I'm meeting with Senator Lee's office at 3:30 today. So I'll keep you guys posted on how that goes.
I was in a community meeting last Saturday where this student, I think young man, he went to Washington, D.C., tried to meet with our delegates, and they would not. I think Representative Chaffetz's office, don't talk about immigration. Don't talk about immigration, okay? Like, they don't want to discuss immigration. That's what his report was, so he was not able to meet with Representative Chaffetz's office. That they refuse, you know, and when they tell us, talk to your congresspeople in Utah, you know, I've only had luck with Senator Hatch's office simply because he's been in office for a long time, and he does help with immigration issues. He does. He has, you know, he's a seasoned politician. He will listen, but I don't. The others would not talk.
I think that one thing, going back to the data and the human stories, one thing that we have found effective nationally as well as locally is really those economic data. We found that elected officials are more likely to talk to you if you connect the what's happening in the economy with the immigration laws and the need for immigrants to help us grow our economy. And that's why I mentioned about that particular website, newamericaneconomy.com.org, because it provides those data. You know, it's very hard to argue that if a specific population is contributing $8 billion to your GDP, to say, well, let's get rid of them, because we can't afford to do that. And there are some great talking points as well in that particular website that you can use to contact your congressional delegation.
And even, well, I just wanted to make clear, like, even though they will not meet with us, that doesn't mean that we don't keep trying. So we do make phone calls, we write emails, we write letters, and I think that's what we should all do. If people care about this issue or all the other issues that are happening right now, I think we should continue to make our voices heard. So
I had a question, a kind of a legal question. So I understood, Marlene, that any basically resident in the U.S. territory is basically considered under
has constitutional rights
under the Bill of Rights. So how it, because from my understanding, there maybe it's just a misinformation with community members that those only pertain to citizens or people maybe under custody. So how do we how can you talk a little bit about that legal argument?
That they have rights?
Yeah, specifics. If you said there's a Supreme Court case, like, yeah. Can you talk a little bit like contextually about how the law protects anybody within our borders?
So the law as I know it before our new administration, so somebody gets stopped. Let's say, you know, they get stopped at Smith's, okay? They don't just get, okay, they have the right to remain silent. The Fifth Amendment applies to them. Let's take my client's case. This is real, okay? So my client is in process. It's one of those, he's married to a U.S. citizen, and in his case, he only entered once and stayed here. So there's a way to petition. That's a year and a half process. While we're in process, knock, knock, you know, with President Obama's priority enforcement, he said anybody with a DUI. So my client had a DUI from 10 years ago, so ICE knocks on the door. They have the right, so the U.S. citizen wife, but even if he were not with the U.S., if they were all undocumented in the house, they have a right not to open the door unless the ICE officer, police officer, could show a specific warrant for that person. They could not. They don't have that warrant. So my client's husband, wife, we don't have to, sorry, go away, do you have a warrant? No. Then go away. You know, we don't want to tell you. We don't have to talk to you. They knock on their basement door. Knock, knock. Hello, we want to talk to you. No, we don't want to talk to you. So people have the Fifth Amendment right not to say anything that would incriminate them or, you know, get them in any trouble. And then what happened was they went away. The ICE agents went away. And guess what? We finished the process. My client has his green card. You know, what if they didn't have rights and they get taken away under expedited removal? We'll take you away. And there goes the wife and kids left at home, you know, in the United States without the father. Yes, so we tell people you have a right to remain silent. And then once you do get detained, you have the right, you can post bond, you have the right to go before the immigration judge, ask for bond, you have the right to seek relief. They give you a piece of paper, the notice to appear before the immigration judge. You go before the immigration judge, they don't provide free counsel because immigration is administrative law. It's not criminal law, okay? So you don't have a right to counsel in an administrative proceeding. Criminal, yes. They say their relief. I'm married to a U.S. citizen. We're in the middle of our petition, okay? I've been the victim of a crime. I'm applying for the U visa. The executive order talked something about only U.S. citizens and permanent residents would have privacy rights, specifically. So he seeks to undermine the due process rights of people. Just, I guess that goes back to the human rights, question, because everybody in the United States has constitutional rights, regardless of their status.
This is just a clarifying question. When you say expedited removal, you mean like the ability to detain someone without a warrant?
According to the executive order, if the officer has probable cause or thinks has reasonable cause to believe that somebody is here, but this is where I'm assuming this is like for, like you're actually at the border, but in the judgment of an immigration officer, otherwise who poses a risk to public safety, can be removed. So the people at the border that get caught, they are expeditedly removed. They're not even asked, unless their exception is like they've been here so many days, 14 days, I think, and they can claim, for example, asylum, that they fear return to their home country because they will be persecuted based on race, religion, national origin, membership in a particular social group, and political reasons.
But there hasn't been any talk of that being a possibility outside of like border situations under the new Trump administration?
Yeah, there is. We have, okay. We as immigration lawyers, we're really struggling to, what? So we have a new practice advisory for expedited removals. It's like, what do we do, Oh, by the way, a colleague of mine, an immigration lawyer, I think 3 days ago, did you hear about that? My colleague, I can say his name because he's a strong advocate also, Aaron Tarin, strong immigration, staunch immigration lawyer. He texted our group, sent an email to our immigration lawyers group. Hey guys, they detained us immigration lawyers for helping refugees at the Houston, not they didn't detain, they cited them for disorderly conduct. They escorted the lawyers who were helping refugees at the Houston airport. They escorted them outside and they gave them citations for disorderly conduct. So Aaron has a big legal defense fund for we all support him, but it's like it's really crazy for us especially lawyers because like, wait, don't we have the law, And what are we teaching the people now? What are our due process rights? No, the Constitution is still there, but this craziness is just taking over right now.
So I too have a really good friend who's undocumented. One of his particular situations is, so his wife is a permanent resident, and he overstayed his visa, and so he's having trouble. So when he went through a legal process and was able to finally get his interview, he got denied, and he has to wait until she can
becomes a citizen,
and she has to wait two another years, and he has, like, potential job opportunities. He was, like, a high-level professional in his country of origin. But he just didn't go through the process. So I was just curious, does any of these orders or how do these orders affect people that overstay visas? Because as I understand, a lot of people that become undocumented don't cross the border. They just overstay a tourist visa, which would be the case of my friend.
So he would fall under any, the any category. Where's that? Anybody who's not in status. So that's the problem, right? So he's waiting for, I have clients like that, they're waiting for their citizenship in order to continue, make it quick for their spouses. The procedures have changed a little bit for that particular case. LPR, legal permanent resident spouse, and out of status or even undocumented, the procedures changed last August where we can do the long process, ask for forgiveness of his unlawful presence. There's a way now, but that's just started last August. But yes, so anybody like that is subject to removal, right? It's really tough. I mean, they're in the process. So we tell people, like especially DACA kids, please don't get a DUI. That takes them out of DACA, okay? DACA does not like DUIs or domestic violence. So that's one thing that the immigrants can do is just stay safe. Don't hang around with people that could get you in trouble. But yeah, you see, it's not simple. It's complicated. Immigration is complicated. It's not black and white. It's not undocumented, legal. And then the whole thing about where the racism comes in is that brown people are thought, oh, you're immigrant, you must be undocumented, especially with the Latinos, right? Especially, but there are a lot of Latinos who are citizens, but the profiling just comes out.
Any more questions before we end? Okay. We'd like to thank you for participating in our forum, and please join me in thanking our esteemed panelists for being with us today.
This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.